said. "Yep," Jeannie said. "It's one of Shakespeare's greatest tragedies." She could say that again. "Anyway, you were about to say something was funny?" she asked. I said. "Not really. I mean, I was, but not anymore." Then Allison started talking to Jeannie, and Mrs. Stricker told us to move toward the exit, and the whole thing just kind of went... pfft. Oh well. Better luck next tragedy. Chapter 34. Stop and Go. We got to have lunch outside again that day. This time it was on the South Bank, which is basically a giant, long park along the Thames River. There was a ton of cool stuff to see, like a graffitied-up skateboard park, people painting by the river, and some people who were art, like human statues who only moved if you put money in their box. There were musicians, too, all kinds of people making money and making art at the same time. Ms. Donatello said they were called buskers. It was super cool. Inspiring, even. That's what my mom would say. So I decided to put the whole Jeannie tragedy in the back seat and keep moving forward. When we started eating lunch, Jeannie sat next to me. "What next?" she asked. "Actually, I have an idea I want to try, and this would be a great spot for it," I said.
"Come on, Jeannie," Jared said. "Let's go buy a t-shirt or something."
"No, I want to do this with Rafe," she said. Jared looked at her, and then evil-eyed me some more. Then he put on that fake smile of his.
"Yeah, okay," he said. "What are we doing?"
I wanted to tell Jared to jump in the Thames and wait for further instructions, but that wasn't going to happen. Besides, I needed at least a couple of people for this. "Why don't you guys stand over there?" I said as we put down our food. I got them lined up with the river in the background. Then I took out my phone. "Now stand really still, but like you're running," I said. My idea was this thing called stop motion. The way you do it is, you turn on the camera and record for maybe half a second. Then you pause it, and the people move, but just a little bit. Then you unpause and record for half a second, and repause. Then they move again. Over and over and over. It's like making a human cartoon, and it looks really cool if you do it right. And here's another thing. You know what happens when super popular people start doing whatever you're doing? Other people get interested. In fact, we'd barely even started before Sabra and Katrina came over.
"What are you guys doing?" Katrina said.
"Making a video," Jeannie said.
"Oh, fun. Can we be in it?" Sabra asked.
Even though if I'd asked her to do it, she probably would have laughed my face off.
"Sure," Jeannie said. "Where do you want them, Rafe?"
"Katrina, go stand right there," I said. "Sabra, stand next to her. Jared and Jeannie, stay right where you are and look surprised." Half a second later, it was like Katrina and Sabra had just popped up into the scene from out of nowhere. And we kept going from there. Pretty soon, almost everyone in the class was getting into it, including Jared. I kept popping people in and out, making it up as I went along, and making something pretty cool, if I do say so myself. Even the other tourists were stopping and watching, like we were part of that whole London art scene. Which I guess we kind of were. Chapter 35. I Spy. When we got in line for the London Eye, I was excited and nervous. And excited, but mostly nervous. The London Eye was like an enormous Ferris wheel, but instead of benches, it had big see-through pod things. I didn't know if getting way up there in those glass pods was going to be like standing inside a tall building, which I could deal with, or maybe it was going to be more like hanging off the edge of a cliff, which I definitely couldn't. If you read my story about last summer in the Rockies,
Then you already know that the whole edge of a cliff thing makes me get dizzy and sweaty and panicky and at least a little bit throw-uppy. It's not pretty. But on the other hand, I knew I could get some amazing shots of London from up there. I didn't want to miss out. And I definitely didn't want to look like Rafe Khachaturian, international chicken, in front of the whole class. Besides, this was nothing compared to the Rockies, right? So I decided to go for it. Those pods were big enough for 25 people, and we were split into two groups. Jeannie and Jared went one way, I went the other. Jared seemed like he'd had enough of the Rafe and Jeannie show for one day, and I didn't want to push my luck with him. I just wanted to focus on getting some great video.
"Welcome to the London Eye," a recording said. "Please step all the way in and mind the closing doors."
Okay, I thought, breathing in slowly. Here goes nothing. And speaking of nothing, that's what I got when I pulled out my phone. All that stop-motion stuff we'd been doing had run the battery down to zilch. I turned around fast, but the doors had already closed. Now I was headed up, up, up and around with a dead camera in my hand, and there wasn't anything I could do about it. Or was there? I worked fast. I dug into my backpack and pulled out the assignment sheet. Then I checked to see who was supposed to take pictures of this thing. Of course, with the classic Khachaturian luck, it was him. "Hey, Miller," I said, "can I use your camera?"
"Yeah, right," Miller said. "Like I'm going to trust you with a brand new MyPhone 10 Deluxe."
"Please," I said, "I'll do your photography assignment." That actually got him interested. He thought about it for a second, then pulled out his phone and punched in the passcode.
"Just remember," he said, "you break it."
"I know, I know. I bought it," I said.
"Yeah," he said, "but I break you, too."
"Fair enough," I said. Then I went to the middle of the pod, sat down on the bench, and tried to get used to the idea that this thing was only going higher before it got any lower. I took another deep breath. "No problem," I thought. "I can do this." And even if I couldn't, it wasn't like I had much choice now. I was in it. It took me a while, but I figured out that if I kept breathing and didn't look straight down over the edge, it wasn't quite as bad as it could have been. Also, that whole huge view of the city, which was awesome, by the way, looked way smaller on the phone screen. So I stayed laser-focused on that. Everything was just a little better looking through the camera. And then, just when it seemed like we were getting to the tippy top of the world, and I was sort of almost getting comfortable, ping! Miller's phone went off. I looked over at him, but he was too busy checking the view to notice. Then I looked down and saw there was a text notification on his screen. The text was from Mom, but all I could see were the first few words. If I wanted to know any more, I had to tap on the message, which was a very tempting thought. It was also a terrible idea, and the reason I know is because I thought, "This is a terrible idea," right before I did it anyway. Maybe it was the altitude. Maybe my curiosity got the best of me. Maybe I'm just an idiot. Who knows? But I'll tell you this much. I sure wasn't expecting what I found out next.
"Dryden, I just got word from Xavier Academy. You will start there on the 1st of the month. Isn't that wonderful?" Smiley face. "Believe me, Chunkins, you are going to love living in Phoenix. Promise." "Love, Mom."
Smiley face, heart, star, smiley face, thumbs up. It was like every molecule in my brain fired at once.
Holy smokes! Miller was moving?
to Phoenix? Not to mention, Chunkins? And I thought Dryden was bad, but wow. This was why Miller had been crying on the first night, wasn't it? Because he was moving far, far away. But not yet, because when I looked up, Miller was coming right at me. "Are you using that camera or not?" he asked. "Yes," I said, kind of weirdly loud. Then I walked over to the pod wall and started filming again before I had to look him in the eye even one more second. After that, my hands kind of took over for me. They went back to making the video on their own, while my brain flipped and flopped and twisted around just trying to have all the thoughts it was having. Because this changed everything. Chapter 36. Pop quiz. Pop meeting. Once I came back down to Earth, in more ways than one, I figured my best option with Miller was to keep doing nothing. I mean, this was huger than huge, for sure, but I wasn't going to tell Dryden that I'd just read his text any more than I was going to tell him that I heard all that crying on the first night. Things between me and Miller had gotten all the way up to not completely horrible by now. I wanted it to keep going that way if I could. Besides, as soon as we pulled up to the hotel that night, Mrs. Stricker dropped another whole pile of uh-oh in my lap.
"Report committee, we will have a short status meeting in the learning center before curfew," she said.
"Does that mean now?" I asked.
"Yes, now,"
Stricker said. I looked right over at Jeannie. This was like a pop quiz. I hadn't had any chance to figure out what we were doing next, or what the new assignments were, or any of the stuff Mrs. Stricker thought I knew how to do. I guess I could have tried to wing it, but who am I kidding? There was no way I could wing something like that.
"What do I say?"
I asked Jeannie while we were walking through the lobby. She was thinking fast, I could tell.
"Just say that everyone is going to switch jobs tomorrow. The writers will do photography, and the photographers will do the writing."
"That's good," I said. It was something I could actually remember.
"Oh, and if Mrs. Stricker asks, we hit three of our topics today," Jeannie said. "Isaiah got a bunch of stuff from Sabra and Kadir on the Saatchi, and I asked Mackenzie to focus on the history of the old globe."
"Whoa, whoa, whoa," I said. "Too much information."
"Well, she's going to want to know," Jeannie said. "And it's supposed to come from you."
I know, I said, frantically trying to keep everything Jeannie said from leaking out of my brain. We were heading up the hall now, away from the front desk and right toward the learning center.
"I've got it," Jeannie said. "Keep your phone where you can see it. I'll text you the rest."
"But my phone's dead," I said. "I have to charge it first."
"There's no time for that," she said.
It was like a countdown to disaster, and I was the bomb that was going to go off in about 12.5 seconds.
"Unless," Jeannie said.
"Unless what?" I said.
"Let's go, you two,"
Mrs. Stricker said. She was standing in the learning center door, looking like she couldn't wait to get upstairs, order room service, and watch some TV. Or whatever it is she does for fun.
"Here, take this," Jeannie said.
She shoved her phone into my hand.
"Open the text window and turn it on mute."
"But," I said.
"Just do it," Jeannie said.
So I did. There wasn't much choice anyway. We were already walking into the room, and that meeting was about to start in 5, 4, 3, 2. Chapter 37. Covert Operations.
"Miss Donatello, may I use your laptop to take notes?" Jeannie asked, once we were all sitting at the big table in the learning center.
"Of course," Miss Donatello said, and slid it over to her.
"Okay, everyone, it's been a long day.
Let's make this quick, Mrs. Stricker said.
I still didn't know where this was headed. Everyone else was getting their notebooks out, but Jeannie was already tapping away on Ms. D's laptop. And then a text popped up on her phone. Are you getting this? Scratch your head for yes.
I scratched my head and kind of glanced over at Jeannie. She just kept typing away, like she didn't even know I was there.
All right, Rafe, Mrs. Stricker said. What's our plan for tomorrow?
At least I was ready for that one.
I think we should switch what we did today, I said. Everyone who did written modules can take pictures tomorrow, and everyone who took pictures can do the write-ups.
That's a very elegant plan, Ms. Donatello said.
I'm impressed, Rafe.
Thanks, I said. It made me feel good, but also guilty, since Jeannie deserved the credit. Meanwhile, I was hoping like crazy that would be it, because I was already out of stuff to say. But Mrs. Stricker kept going.
Now remember, you'll continue posting individual updates to the school website, she said. But we need to make sure all topic areas are covered in the living learning entry we submit at the end of the week. How is that coming along, Rafe?
Well, I said, let me just, check my notes. I flipped through a few pages in my notebook and pretended to read them, while Jeannie kept tapping away, eventually stammering, hang on 2 or 10 seconds. And then,
we have a good start on history, art, and current events.
Phew.
We have a good start on history, art, and current events, I said.
Politics and science will get caught up tomorrow.
Politics and science will get caught up tomorrow, I said.
And by the end of the week, we should be funny cornered.
And by the end of the week, we should be funny cornered, I said. Excuse me? Mrs. Stricker said.
And everyone looked up.
Fully covered. Sorry.
Fully covered, I said. I mean, fully covered.
Stupid autocorrect.
I don't know if Jeannie was sweating like me, but I felt like I was drowning. Mrs. Stricker just stared back at me. It was like she could smell something was wrong, but she couldn't tell what it was. And believe me, she can smell trouble. Everything else stopped, including my heart, I think. Then she finally stood up.
You all have 1 hour before curfew. Please have your latest materials loaded onto the HVMS site by then. I'll be checking your progress from my room, she said,
and flipped her laptop closed on her way out the door. When I looked over at Jeannie, she didn't look sweaty at all. In fact, I think she was ready for round two. Not me. I felt like I'd just starred in all the Mission Impossible movies at the same time. And the only reason I'd made it out alive was thanks to Special Agent Galetta, also known as Jeannie. Which, if you ask me, must be short for genius.
Chapter 38. Crazy Dangerous.
By the time I got up to the room that night, I was beat. I felt like a wrung-out wash rag after a double shift at the 24-hour car wash. All I wanted to do was crawl into a nice, comfortable bed and go to sleep for 8 or 20 hours. Of course, I also wanted a lifetime supply of pepperoni pizza, world peace, and Bill Gates' ATM card, but I wasn't getting any of those either. When I walked in, Miller flicked his light off right away, even though he wasn't going to sleep. He was still watching TV on top of the covers. What's up? I said. He said, which I think meant nothing. You want some Cadbury? I asked him, and held up a candy bar I bought in the lobby.
Nah, he said.
And that's when I knew he was feeling worse than ever. Miller likes food more than I do. I figured he must be pretty depressed about moving to Phoenix, but I couldn't tell him that. "Hey, Miller," I said, you don't seem so good." This time, he didn't say anything. He just kept watching TV, even though it was only a commercial for something called potted meat, whatever that is. "Miller," I said again.
"I don't want to talk about it," he said.
"Talk about what?" I said. "What's going on?" I could tell things had changed between us, because I was saying stuff that would have put me in the obituaries back home, and Miller didn't even pretend like he cared. So I kept going. "You just seem like you wish you'd never come to London," I said.
"Good call, Sherlock," he said, and turned up the TV.
"Okay, whatever," I said. "I'll see you in the morning." And I was halfway to my bedroom in the bathroom when I got another idea. A big one. Kind of crazy, too. Like, almost Leo the Silent crazy. But I figured it was time to try something new. So I stopped and turned around. I walked over to the dresser, where Miller kept his never-ending pile of junk food, and then I started putting some chips and cans of soda into my backpack. It felt like I was taking my life into my own hands, because I kind of was. But it snapped Miller out of whatever had him lying there like a zombie. As soon as he saw me going for his food, he launched off that bed like an enemy missile.
"What do you think you're doing?" he snarled. "Are you crazy?"
"Yeah," I said, looking him right in the eye while I dropped another bag of Walker's crisps in there. "A little, anyway." I am pretty sure he pulled back his fist to send me through the wall, but I had my eyes locked on his. This was a do-or-die moment, probably with extra emphasis on the die. "Come on," I said, trying to sound at least a little like I wasn't shaking in my socks. "Let's hit the roof again. And this time, we're bringing some supplies." Chapter 39. Operation Baby Steps. Believe it or not, it worked. I think Miller liked that first mission up to the roof a lot. In fact, that's what I was counting on. So, as soon as curfew kicked in and security guy was out of the way, we went for it. In fact, it wasn't nearly as hard the second time around. We got up to that roof faster than you can say stealth mode. There wasn't even any tape on our doors. Maybe our group had worked up some sort of trust with security guy already. Either that, or he was just plain lazy. This time, we pulled one of those restaurant tables and a couple of folding chairs to the middle of the roof. Then we sat back and relaxed with a table full of Miller's junk food. He even let me eat a little of it, which was, frankly, amazing. And then came part two of my plan. If it had a name, I'd call it Operation Baby Steps. "Hey, Miller, I didn't mean to be nosy before," I said. Miller finished chugging a can of orange soda and popped a Coke.
"Whatever," he said.
"You just don't seem like you're having any fun," I said. "None of my friends are here either." "I get it."
"No, actually you don't," Miller said.
He seemed like he was heading down into the dumps again, so I didn't say anything. I just drank my warm Coke and watched the city lights. Then, after a long time, Miller spoke up again.
"It's my little sister," he said.
I didn't know what he meant, but it felt like something had just changed. Maybe something big. It reminded me of when you see those giant icebergs breaking off from themselves, kind of surprising and scary at the same time. "What about her?" I said.
"She has to go to this clinic in Phoenix," he said.
"For what?" I asked him. Then he named something I'd never heard of. It sounded to me like the biggest word Miller had ever used. "Does that mean she's sick?" I asked. Miller just shrugged, but I think that meant yes. It made me want to tell him about Leo, and how I had a sick brother once. But then I stopped and thought about it for a second. Seeing as how Leo died, maybe that wasn't such a good thing to talk about after all. Even if it did happen a long time ago. I bet she'll be okay, I said instead. That clinic must be really good, or your parents wouldn't take her all the way down there.
Yeah, Miller said.
To tell you the truth, I still wasn't sorry Miller was moving to Phoenix, but I was definitely less glad about it than before. He didn't say anything else, and I was pretty sure the conversation was over, but I wasn't done yet. I still had my backpack with me, and I pulled out the assignment sheet for the next day. Then I took out my pencil and erased Miller's name.
"What are you doing?" he said.
"I'm taking you off the assignment sheet for tomorrow," I said. "I mean, you probably don't care or anything, but it sounds like you could use a day off from that stuff." All I heard then was Miller swallowing hard in the dark, which made me feel 100% weird, for both our sakes. Or maybe he just had an extra big chip in his mouth. I don't know.
"Hey, Rafe," he said.
"Yeah?" I said.
"Thanks," he said. "I owe you one."
"Don't worry about it," I told him. And I even meant it. I was supposed to be doing nice things for people. Be friendly, right? Even to Dryden Miller. Especially to Miller now. Chapter 40. Day 4 in London. Hey there, all you readers and viewers and listeners and fans. Welcome to Day 4 in London. Are you ready? I hope so, because it's time to play everyone's favorite game. Walk your feet off. Here's how it's played. 1. Leave the hotel first thing after breakfast. 2. Walk right past the place where the bus usually parks. You won't be needing it. 3. On today's agenda, we have the National Portrait Gallery, changing of the guard at Buckingham Palace, Hyde Park, the Houses of Parliament, and everything in between. Total miles? Too many to count. 4. Anyone who makes it to the end of the day alive wins! 5. Bonus points if you finish without blisters, limping, falling behind, or complaining. 6. Helpful hint. Nobody earns bonus points. 7. Comfortable shoes required. 8. Oxygen not included. 9. Ready? Set? Walk! Chapter 41. Trouble on the Tube. By the time we left the National Portrait Gallery, everyone was pretty much walked out. I'd gotten some great video and some not-so-great video. I'd also spent nearly the rest of my money on presents for Mom, Grandma, and even Georgia. Plus, the biggest Cadbury bar you've ever seen. For me. But the best part was still coming. Our last stop of the afternoon was going to be Madame Fifi's House of Wax. And to make it even better, we got to ride there on the subway and take a bus back to the hotel afterward. I'm pretty sure if we had to walk any more, everyone would have been going home on crutches. I've lived in a city before, but I've never ridden on a subway. In London, it's called the Tube, which is a cool name, if you ask me. It's like a whole huge underground maze that goes everywhere. When we got on the train, I didn't fight anyone for a seat. I was still trying to do nice things and be friendly, so I held on to a pole instead, and tried not to stand on my blisters. Then, when we were almost to Madame Fifi's, Jared came over to where I was standing. I didn't know what he wanted, but I had a hunch it wasn't about starring in my next movie.
"What's up, Rafe?"
he said, flashing that weird smile. "Nothing," I said, because he wasn't really asking.
"You and Jeannie have been getting a lot of stuff done for that report," he said. "Haven't you?"
"Yeah," I said, It's been pretty great.
Pretty great, he said. She's not your girlfriend. You know that, right?
That wasn't a real question either, but I knew where he was going.
Don't worry, Jared, I told him. It's not like... Oh, I'm not worried, he said. I'm just saying, you got the help you needed. Now, maybe you could stop crushing on my girlfriend and leave her alone. Cool?
Jeannie was way across the subway car, but I could see her looking at us with this question on her face, like, what are they up to? Jared just smiled and waved at her. That smile of his was getting creepier by the second. And I didn't even answer him this time. We were pulling into our stop at Waterloo Station. Plus, it was starting to hit my brain what was really going on with all the fake smiles and questions. Or at least, what might have been going on. Fact. Jared was taller than me, better looking than me, and pretty much better at everything than I was. Fact. He didn't have any reason to be jealous of me, but he sure was acting that way. Theory. Jared actually was jealous. Conclusion? The world had gone completely insane. Chapter 42. Welcome to Madame Fifi's House of Wax. I'd already seen a brochure for Madame Fifi's back at the hotel. Not only did the main exhibit of wax figures sound pretty cool, Barack Obama, Darth Vader, Beyonce, but I was even more excited about the basement. Because that's where they had Madame Fifi's Temple of Terrors and all the gory stuff. In other words, all the good stuff. Where else were you going to see beheadings, guys on spikes, people on the rack? And a fully stocked gift shop. It was going to be like walking into a living horror movie with overpriced knickknacks at the end. Which meant that this video was practically going to make itself. Our tour guide this time was a lady called Ms. Evelyn. Except she said it like Eve-lyn. She also wore this long dress and a turban on her head. Like some kind of really old movie star who over-pronounced every word she ever said. Welcome, 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 she told us, which took about an hour to say, and I knew right then I was going to have to be patient. Ms. Evelyn started off by taking us around the ground floor exhibit. Besides all the movie and sports people, there were a bunch of wax dummies of people from history. And of course, she told us all about them, too. I got some good video, though. We saw everyone from Prince the Musician to the Prince of Wales, and Elton John to Genghis Khan. Hey, I'm a poet. Jeannie kept giving me looks when Mrs. Stricker wasn't watching, so I'd know which parts made sense to focus on. And Jared kept giving me looks, too. When Jeannie wasn't watching, I tried to ignore him, and I made sure to keep my distance from him and Jeannie. The whole time, Ms. Evelyn was gliding around and talking, and talking, and talking, while the rest of us were getting as impatient as little kids on Christmas Eve. Either she didn't know that everyone was goofing off behind her back during the tour, or she didn't care. Or maybe she had it all figured out. Maybe she knew all that grinning and goofing off was going to stop the very minute we headed down to the basement. If that's what she thought, she was exactly right. When we finally got to the main entrance for the Temple of Terrors, Ms. Evelyn stopped cold. Like a dead body. Then she looked at all of us, one by one, and her eyes got really big and spooky.
I hope you have prepared yourselves, she said.
Yes, everyone basically yelled at the same time in anticipation. My voice didn't even crack, which was like a little present from me to me. Thanks, voice.
Very well, then,
she said, and opened this big door to show us some winding stairs down into the dark. But before she could lead us down them, she stopped and turned around again.
There's nobody in the group with a weak heart?
She asked. No, almost everyone said.
All right, then,
Ms. Evelyn said.
But please, don't say I didn't warn you.
She was totally putting on a show, if you ask me. And yeah, it was totally working, because I was a little bit nervous by then. Maybe more than a little bit. I think everyone else was, too, because the whole group got pretty quiet and tense after that. When I looked over at Miller, he seemed like he didn't want to be there. But that could have meant anything. Scared? I asked him.
Shut up, he said.
Yeah, we were totally like best buds now. So I pointed my phone camera straight ahead and kept on going. You know those movie scenes where it's like the camera is someone? All you can see is what that character sees, and maybe you just hear them breathing? That's what I was going for. It was like letting whoever watched the video go on the tour with us, and see whatever we were going to see. So come on, step right this way, if you dare. Chapter 43 Creeped Out. It was way darker and smokier in the basement. All I could see ahead was this flickering, dim yellow light, and all I could hear was someone screaming shrilly. I was like 87% sure it was just fake torches, a dry ice machine, and a sound recording. But you know when you're in bed at night and you're about 87% sure there isn't a crazed maniac outside your window wielding a chainsaw and a face mask made out of the skin of his victims? It was like that. Cool, someone said, when we walked by a long row of heads in glass jars. I definitely got a shot of those. The farther in we went, the more crowded it got. There were fake people getting executed, and fake people who had already died. Also executioners, famous murderers, and a bunch of other people you'd never want to meet. I think the creepiest part was the way all of it wasn't just from a movie. This was stuff that had really happened, in real life. And some of those wax dummies had eyes that followed you wherever you went. Like Vlad the Impaler, whose name kind of speaks for itself, and Jack the Ripper, who terrorized London in Victorian times, and thankfully wasn't around to murder us all now. And Madame Elizabeth Bathory. Guess what she liked to take a bath in? Hint, it's not hot, perfumed water and frothy bubbles. More obvious hint, it was blood. I got a great shot of that display, too, right down to the slightly pink towels.
That is awesome,
Jeannie said, looking over my shoulder. But she was also whisper-imitating Ms. Evelyn.
I love corpses,
I whispered back, and we both cracked up. We'd have to cut that part out of the video, but oh well. Do you think we're getting everything we need? Jeannie asked. I think so, I said. But I'm down to fumes on my phone battery. Here, use mine again, she said. I don't know, I said. Why not? Jeannie said, and gave me her phone to take. I didn't know how to say no, so I took it. Right before I turned around and saw the scariest dummy of them all. Maybe it was the fake torchlight, but I swear, Jared looked just like one of those wax killers. And I don't mean the waxy part.
Hey, Jeannie, he said, even though he was looking at me. Come over here. There's something I want to show you.
Okay, she said. See you later, Rafe. Sure, I said. but I heard a little bit of what they said before they walked away.
Why does he need your phone? Jared asked her.
Because his battery ran out, Jeannie said.
Yeah, right, Jared said.
What's that supposed to mean? Jeannie asked. I didn't hear any more after that. So I just went back to focusing on the dead people, killers, and creeps down there in the basement. Besides Jared, I mean. Chapter 44. And then... By the end of the tour, I think everyone was kind of worn out from being so scared. I got a bunch of great stuff, though. Right up until Jeannie's phone died, too, and I gave it back to her.
Thank you, thank you. This is our last tour of the day, Miss Evelyn said.
I noticed she was talking a lot faster, too.
If you wouldn't mind proceeding to the exit, thank you, thank you.
Excuse me, ma'am, I asked her. Is there a bathroom I can use?
Loo's are back downstairs on the left, love, she said. Just past the main torture chamber.
There was a bus outside to pick us up, and everyone was still filing out that way, so I ran down real quick, back into the dark. I tried to shake off that feeling like someone was watching me, but it wasn't so easy. Not with all those glass eyes everywhere. I hustled past one door marked Witches, and opened the next one, marked Warlocks. It was a relief to just get in there and turn on a real light. But then, I was halfway unzipped, and I heard this loud click behind me. Then a thud, and a shuffling sound from outside the bathroom door.
What was that? I said,
even though I was alone. Unless you count Leo the Silent, which I was starting to do pretty quick. I still had to go to the bathroom, but I went back over and tried to open the door.
Tried.
Did you catch that? It's important. Someone, or some ghost of some crazed psycho killer from hundreds of years ago, had just locked me in the loo. I was trapped. Right by the torture chambers where dozens of creepy wax killers and corpses were posed.
Yes, for real. Gulp!
Chapter 45.
Help!
Oh, man. Oh, man. Oh, man. Okay, you might think this is the craziest part of all, but before I did anything else, I did what I'd come down there to do.
The only other option was wetting my pants. Can you imagine if I showed up on that bus with a dark stain where my zipper was? Nope. No way, I thought. Let the ghost of Vlad the Impaler take me instead. So I did my business as fast as humanly possible, and then went back to pounding on the bathroom door.
Oh, man. Oh, man. Oh, man. Leo, what do? I said.
I was seriously panicking now. I've already told you about my active imagination, right? That's a good thing, most of the time. But it can also work against you. For a second, I thought about calling someone. But then I remembered I couldn't.
Grandma Dottie has got to get a new phone, Leo said. That thing must be 6 years old.
That's what you're thinking about? I said. We need to find a way out of here.
I'm just saying, with a dead phone.
Don't say dead, I said.
I'm not sure how long it went on. A lifetime? 2 minutes? Somewhere in between? But then something rattled on the other side of the door, and I jumped back. When it started to open, I might have even screamed, too. Was I about to be saved, or meet my gut-ripping fate? And yeah, maybe I was being a little dramatic. But try getting locked in a Temple of Terror's bathroom sometime and see what kinds of tricks your mind plays on you. Even when I saw the security guard standing there, I wasn't completely done feeling freaked out.
What in the world? The guard said.
He was holding a chair in one hand and the doorknob with the other.
Looks like you got pranked, young man. And not a very funny prank at that.
Is my bus still here? I yelled.
Sorry, don't know, he said. I'm just here to close up for the night.
What? I said. What time is it?
He looked at his watch. 10 to 5, he said. I'd only been in there a couple of minutes.
That was great news, but I didn't have any time to lose. Thanks for letting me out, I said, and took off running up the stairs. The lobby was empty when I got there, and the lights were off. There was no sign of Ms. Evelyn or anyone, but maybe they were all waiting for me outside. I pushed through the front door, ran out onto the sidewalk, and... No bus. No Mrs. Stricker. No nothing. Just me. Lost in London.
Chapter 46. Not here.
Okay, I thought. Don't panic. Really, don't panic, I thought.
It didn't work. I was totally panicking. The door to Madame Fifi's had just locked behind me, and no one answered when I pounded on it. I was standing there by myself, somewhere in the middle of London. Did I have any money in my pockets? No, I did not. Did I have a working phone? No, I did not. Did I know where the hotel was? No, I did not. And even though none of this was my fault, something told me Mrs. Stricker wasn't going to care about that. In fact, she told me so, right after the whole Crown Jewels disaster.
Don't worry, Leo told me. We've got this.
What do I do? I said.
Back to the riverbank? He suggested.
I just spotted a sign for South Bank, and that was as good as anything. At least it was somewhere I'd been before. So I followed the signs, real ones this time. The more I walked, the more I figured out the whole story. First of all, someone had locked me in that bathroom. And you could bet that someone's name started with an M or a J. For Miller or Jared. And either way, that was only half the story. I was pretty sure the second half went something like this.
Press conquest!
Then Mrs. Stricker put a check by my name, the bus took off, and nobody even noticed I was missing. The only thing was, it didn't add up when I thought about it. I mean, I knew Jared pretty much hated me. But I thought Miller and I were actually doing okay. He even said he owed me one. Whatever. I couldn't worry about all that right now. I had to focus. Survival mode, on. The only option was to figure out a way back, hopefully faster than the bus. Then I could hang around outside the hotel and wait for them to show up. Yeah, that was it. I'd stay out of sight, like maybe behind a big plant, and when everyone started filing off the bus, I'd just fall into line. Oh, wait. That's another movie. Never mind. What I needed was a ride. A city bus would be cheap, if I knew which one to take, which I didn't. But a taxi could get me there. The question was, how much would that cost? Because I had exactly £0 and 0 change in my pocket. So then, how quick could I get the cash? And could I really earn it in the way I was starting to think just might work?
Sure you can, Leo said.
Maybe, I thought. But there was only one way to find out. When I got to the river, there were tons of people around. No ghosts or flesh eaters or wax murderers. Just regular tourists, buskers, that kind of thing. Perfect. I found an empty spot where I could sit on a bench. Then I opened my backpack and pulled out my sketch pad and pen. I took a deep breath. This was something I could do, but I was still kind of scared to try it.
Just go for it, Leo said. This is awesome.
Easy for you to say, I told him. I'm the one who's going to spend the rest of his life in middle school.
Not helping, Leo said. You can do this, Cachadorian. Now!
So I drew a picture of the first person I could think of. Jeannie Galetta. She was fresh in my memory anyway, and it was better than advertising with a picture of Vlad the Impaler. When it was done, I wrote portraits, £3, at the top of the page. Was that the right price? I had no idea. Would it be enough to get me a taxi back to the hotel? Hopefully. So, as the next wave of tourists walked by, I took another deep breath and held up my drawing. Then I called out, nice and clear, "Would anyone like their portrait drawn?" I was officially open for business. Chapter 47. Drawing on My Experience. Here's the amazing thing. It actually worked. Not right away, but after asking about 20 people if they wanted a drawing of themselves, someone said yes. And then someone else after that. So, even though I was still nervous about Mrs. Stricker, I also started getting into it. I'm not saying they were going to hang my stuff in the National Portrait Gallery, but it was the first time I got paid for my artwork. Once I'd done a couple of drawings for £3, I told the next lady it was £5, and she didn't even blink. She asked if I could draw her and her daughter next to Big Ben, and I said no sweat. She even paid me double, since there were two of them. £10! "Here you go," she said, handing me the money. "My daughter says you're very dreamy, with that sketch pad and those lovely eyes of yours." "Mum," the girl said. She seemed like she was just as embarrassed as I was, except I think it was bad embarrassed for her, and a tiny bit good embarrassed for me, if you know what I mean. Either way, I just turned red and started packing up my stuff. It was time to go. I didn't know it yet, but all this was the easy part. Next, I had to find a cab, figure out how to make it stop for me, hope the driver knew where the hotel was, pray that I had enough money to get there, and then deal with the hard part. Also known as Principal Ida P. Stricker. Chapter 48. Hotel, Sweet Hotel. By the time my cab pulled up in front of the hotel, £14.35, I told the driver to keep the change, I was feeling kind of numb. Especially my feet. I think I walked about 18 miles that day. Also, I didn't really know what to expect next. The lobby was practically full when I walked inside. I saw a couple of policemen and a bunch of people from the hotel. Mrs. Stricker was talking on the phone, and Ms. Donatello was the first one to see me. "There he is," she said. It was like I'd just turned into some kind of human magnet, because everyone came at me at once. There weren't any cameras or reporters, but it sure felt that way, with all the questions. "Are you okay, son? What happened? How did you get back? Where were you?" That last one was Mrs. Stricker, in case you couldn't guess. She was at the head of the pack, and that's when I knew it was all over for me. I was about to get the biggest F of my life. But then, just as fast, I thought of something else, and I realized maybe it didn't have to go that way. So I answered the questions with a question. "What happened?" I said, trying my best to look scared, which wasn't that hard after everything that happened. "That's what I'm asking you!" Mrs. Stricker said. "Well," I looked around at everyone looking back at me, and I took my time. "One minute I was in the bathroom," I said, "and the next everyone was just gone. You left me behind." I wasn't going to say anything about Miller or Jared. The whole idea right now was to simplify this, not make it more complicated.
"But you answered at roll call," Mrs. Stricker said. "It's right here."
She even held up her list so I could see where my name was checked off.
"Except he couldn't have," Ms. Donatello said loudly, "because he wasn't on the bus."
And everyone went from looking at me back to Mrs. Stricker.
But,
Mrs. Stricker said,
Rafe, I am so...
Now she looked like she was going to throw up.
I am so sorry, she said. You must have been very brave.
I took a big breath and let it out. I was relieved, but not in the way they thought.
I'm just really glad to be back safe, I said, and looked at the ground.
I was pretty scared when I realized I was all alone in this big city. What can I say? I was totally milking it. I know that doesn't make me a better person, but I didn't feel too guilty about it either. You know what they say about desperate times calling for desperate measures, right? And besides, Mrs. Stricker really did leave me behind. And it really wasn't my fault. That's just the truth. So I'm sticking to it. Chapter 49. A Night Not on the Town. I got in trouble with Mrs. Stricker anyway, even if she didn't put it that way. Once everything had settled down, she came over to talk to me again. And it started out with, I think it would be best for you if... Okay, time out. When an adult says that, there's maybe a 50-50 chance it's actually going to be something that's best for you. We all know that, right? Half the time, it's all about what they want. Which I guess is why I got left back that night. So while everyone else went to see a musical at the National Theater, I ate dinner with Mr. Chin at the hotel so I could get some rest. Basically, that's what you call an in-hotel suspension. On the downside, I was missing everything that night, and it was all Miller's fault, or Jared's. I also had to listen to Andrea Chin's dad talk all about his job running a human resources department at a law firm. But on the upside? Well, I guess I got that rest I was supposed to have. Chapter 50. My Mind Officially Blown. Everyone got back later than curfew. I was already in my room, watching people play darts on TV, when Miller came in. He actually looked kind of pumped.
Man, everyone was talking about you, he said.
Yeah, I said. I'll bet. I didn't want to pick a fight, but I was pretty ticked off. I mean, if Miller was actually the one who locked me in the bathroom, that really stank. But it didn't take long for me to find out otherwise.
Jeannie made Jared tell Mrs. Stricker about what he did to you, Miller said.
She did?
Yeah. So you're off the hook.
I am? I said.
Yeah, Miller said, looking at me like, duh. I mean, it was a pretty good stunt, if you ask me. But it's not like they were just going to let that one slide.
Wow, I said. I guess that meant Jared was the one in trouble now. And I never even had to name names. Miller wasn't done yet, either. Not by a long shot.
So, you want to know the funniest part? He said. First, Jeannie made Jared tell on himself. And then, she turned right around and dumped him.
She... What?
Dumped him, he said. Just like that.
And I thought...
Gong!
So, in other words, the only thing that could have possibly topped everything else that day... did. Jeannie dumped Jared. Jared had locked me in the bathroom. Miller hadn't. But wait, I said. So, when Mrs. Stricker took roll call... Miller shrugged.
Yeah, that's on me. Kind of force of habit, you know?
Right, but then why didn't you say anything? I asked.
I just thought you were sitting somewhere else, Miller told me. They figured it out before I did.
Dude!
What? I'm not your babysitter, idiot.
It was like the end of the longest day ever.
By now, I just wanted to stop talking, go to bed, and try to figure out what it all meant before my brain turned into potted meat. But first, I had one more thing to do.